Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games, hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo. Joining me as always...
Good morning, Tommy! It is, in fact, the morning. One of the very, yes. very rare morning recording sessions for the Filthy Casuals boys. Ben Vanel here. And welcoming the third member of the show, a freshly shaven young gentleman.
I'll chop my fucking hair off and I feel like a baby. I've done my whole body except for the head. I'm empty. I'm going to win the swimming.
We should be doing our Manscaped ad this week.
Well, we're not, so don't give him a free one.
I've taken the hair from your face, Knox, and I've started to grow it onto mine. I'm starting to get a little lockdown beard going.
That's disgusting. That's the filthiest thing I've ever heard.
I scampered through your pipes and swept up the hair.
They didn't go in the pipes, so it shows what you know. They were in the bin. Don't know what you got, but I think you've rubbed shit on your face. Shows what you know. Shows what you know. Caught you out. Caught in 4K.
I like it. I wanted shit on my face.
I chopped it all off because we're in another lockdown here, and it makes the feeling of wearing none of my masks fit. I've had to readjust them all, and they're slipping down off my face and my nose is hanging out. And that's my explanation for it every time I walk around picking up every fucking avocado at the supermarket. I'm going to sneeze as well because I'm talking about my face. It's making my face feel awkward.
My mask just keeps getting blown off by the wind. Sorry, officer. I don't know.
It happened to my pants as well. I shaved my... anyway.
I'd love it if that was a thing that the body did. Once you start talking about the face, then it's involuntary that you start to sneeze. Like, the face is like, well, if you're just going to be there yabbering about me, then I'm going to get involved in the action.
My nostrils are burning. Like
some of this? Exactly. Yeah, it's the literal... I get that sometimes. You talk about your eyes. Someone's like, oh, yeah, I had to get glasses because, my vision's getting worse. Sometimes I'll get, like, sympathetic, like, sore eyes or, like, your eyes will water.
Yep.
I guess
it's like the yawning thing, right? It's contagious.
The yawning thing, yeah, the yawning thing is crazy that that's the only thing that the body does that another person can react to. Like, if just...
What about a punch? That's something that your body does that another person reacts to.
What about...
Tommy. Shows what you know.
What about a smooch? What a lovely smooch.
Yep.
You know?
Yawn thing is... Is that thing about the psychopaths real? Because if that is real and having a reaction of someone else talking about their eyes and your eyes start watering, maybe I'm partially a psychopath then.
Or maybe I'm an extreme empath.
Which is the more likely. Very much doubt that.
Out of the two options.
I never knew that. Is that a real thing? If you psychopaths don't yawn when other people yawn?
Apparently,
because the yawning thing is an empathy thing. So
right. Interesting. Well, that'd be great.
Yawning catching is because it's meant to make all of us go to sleep at the same time is the idea. Right? Like, so it's meant to, it's a group bonding thing and an indication. And I read as well, while I was studying my PhD, that it wasn't just reading the subtitles on a TikTok. That when you know how some people are like night owls, that's also evolutionary because you need some people to be awake during the night to watch out for panthers.
It's always panthers in those examples as well, isn't it?
They're our biggest predator.
I guess so.
You know how some people fucking hate coriander and whatever? That is so that if the coriander's poisoned, not everyone dies.
Wow.
Because some in the tribe
well,
are like, no,
like soap
thank
to
you.
Some people, doesn't it?
Mm, yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I don't like it, yeah. But it doesn't taste like soap. It just tastes like a vegetable.
Yeah. I love it. I'm a big coriander fan. One of my favorite herbs to put in a meal.
I barely know
it. It's pretty good. Had some yesterday. A big bami just swimming in the spicy lettuce.
And that's beautiful a classic stuff. Coriander dish. You can't
absolutely.
Have it without it.
Shut up. You know what I've been...
Oh, wait. I thought of an actual tie-in to video games. Overcooked, one of the PS Plus games this coming month. In that, you maybe use coriander.
Yep.
That's
and Hitman 2. I'm going to fucking snipe anyone who doesn't like coriander because they're fucking wrong.
Yeah, yes. Or like Doom because they used to call those corridor shooters and that sounds a bit like coriander.
Yeah.
You could maybe use
that. A friend
that.
Of mine was saying to me recently, she's like, I love a banh mi. I go in, I get it without the spicy stuff on it, without the coriander. And just went through, like, taking out all the inherently Vietnamese, like, banh mi ingredients. And I was just like, why don't you just go to Subway? Like, literally, that's just what you're ordering.
It's a pork and carrot sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm reading about video games on the internet right now. Can I tell you that? And have you seen, because, like, you know, we're very lucky as well that evolutionarily we're at the top because... coriander fans and PS5 owners.
Right.
Yep.
This is what Darwin was writing about when he tweeted at Sony, where's my PS5?
Yeah. People
I'm
who
famous,
don't own
I
a PS5.
One for free.
People who don't own a PS5, you're the members of the tribe who will survive if the PS5s turn out to be poisoned. So you should be really actually quite grateful.
Well, maybe they
we
have.
We can't have everyone have a PS5 because we need some people to not be distracted for when the Panthers turned up.
Yeah.
Right.
Guys
right,
like
right.
us, we're getting ripped limb from limb because we're in the middle of a big Ratchet and Clank session.
When we review games on the PS5, other members of the tribe yawn. Because there are better reviews available elsewhere.
I doubt that.
That's not true. We're the best in the world. They like replaced components in the PS5 already? There's new versions out there?
No.
There's a new model, and if you're buying one now, it has like a different heatsink that they think might be worse.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But
I like this.
Cheaper to manufacture, I assume. And you can also turn that little screw that is for like the mounting stand.
Yes, the base. Yeah, the stand.
Yeah. That is like self-turnable rather than having to go get a coin, I think.
I did see that. Yeah.
It's tiny, tiny changes.
Yeah. The heatsink is worse. Worse, but cheaper. But I assume the PS5 is not cheaper.
No, they're exactly the same price. And also, I don't know if they actually are worse. It's just, this always happens with consoles. There's tons of different revisions of every console that exists.
Little
beyond
things that don't change the performance or anything that are just like,
Well, like the Xbox One had its, it's in this article. The CPU and the GPU both got a crunk up.
Oh.
They cranked them because they just figured out they could do it. And it doesn't really have that much of an effect on performance, I don't think. Most of these things don't. Like, every PS2 or PS3 or whatever has had different versions beyond just, like, the Slim or the whatever, the new revised models. But it's pretty interesting. The older consoles had it in crazy ways sometimes. Like, do you remember the 3DO?
Mm-hmm.
Vaguely.
Well, let me tell you a story about the 3DO because there's not much happening this week.
All right. Start from the start where you tell everyone what a 3DO was, by the way.
The company Panasonic was a big hitter in early 90s audio hardware and video hardware, and they decided to get into the console market. But instead of manufacturing the 3DO themselves, maybe they were one who did manufacture it. The company 3DO, this is the story. Okay. The company 3DO was started by, I think... the guy who went on, I think he was involved in like, I don't remember, Wikipedia.org.
this is like a Wikipedia article where the bits that say citation needed are more dominant than actual text in the article.
What does 3DO stand for?
The number 3 and the letter D mean three-dimensional, and O means oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Three dimensions. Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay.
But it was a console that was basically... you could buy the manufacturing rights for a design of the console that the company made. So multiple different companies made their own versions of 3DOs.
You franchise it out.
Exactly. It's sort of like there's things these days that do that. Like I think the Mister... is like that, where it's just like, here's the blueprints, and if you want to make 3D printing is a similar thing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think it's cool when different versions of things come along.
Well, wasn't that the thing with Banjo-Kazooie on the Nintendo 64, the whole thing where it was going to be the stop and swap, where you would, when the sequel came out, you would be able to take the Banjo-Kazooie cartridge out, put the Banjo-Tooie cartridge in and unlock certain stuff in it. And
right.
they had to get rid of it because they had by that time there were enough different models of Nintendo 64 on the market, and some of them, because in the original ones it kept a bit of... it kind of kept the game a bit active for like a few seconds, but they that time frame kind of went down with like new... little revisions that they'd made to it, so they couldn't put it in because they had no idea of knowing. Some people have like a 6 second window to play with on their console, and other people who've got a newer one might only have like 1 second, so they can't guarantee that it's going to work for everyone.
And with PS3s, they started off all being like hardware PS2 compatible. They had PS2 components in the actual system, which they then got rid of and made it software emulation, which they then got rid of that and just said you can't emulate PS2 games on these anymore.
That was brutal, missing out on that first run of those, because that was like the end for a while of backwards compatibility for PlayStations.
Right.
It was like the last thing.
It's done now, right?
Yeah.
That you can't... I guess PS4 games you can play on a PS5 and...
Exactly, but there was...
that's all you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to play PS4 games on PS5. But yeah, there was years in between where there was just no backwards compatibility for Sony.
Yeah, but they're like a brief window where it was the norm. Get this new console and like you can play all the old previous stuff on it.
Those things are worth a lot of money today as well. If you can get your hands on one, it's like CHA-1000, something like that is the model.
Right.
It's locked down. We've all looked at things that we might want to waste some fucking money on, and mine has been backwards compatible PS3s for a period of time.
This ties into a thought that I had during the week. So for anyone outside of Victoria/Australia, we're in lockdown in Melbourne. We got the announcement yesterday that it's extended for the foreseeable future, another couple of months or so, and I'm back in a big way to just buying bullshit online. I told you guys the other day I pulled the trigger on buying the Seinfeld Lego, which is a real indication of just where we're at here mentally. And thinking about it the other day, something I was pretty down on when we talked about it a couple of months ago, didn't really see the need for it in my life. And then during the week, I was thinking about it, and purely because it would mean the joy of something turning up in the mailbox and being something to focus on for a couple of hours, I had the thought of, so help me God, I think I'm getting an OLED Switch.
Oh, wow.
Like, I can see myself being just depressed enough to think that that's something that's just going to lift my spirits for a couple of hours out of the day.
Makes
just
a lot of sense.
It out,
if we're in,
sliding the little plastic screen cover off it and thinking about that made me feel really happy.
They should sell just like pieces of plastic that have that sticky paper on them that you can just peel off. Like how they sell bubble wrap for stressed adults.
Yeah, or you should be able to send it off and they just completely repackage it for you like it's new. So they put all that shit on.
That's a great idea.
They put it in a brand new box. They send it back to you for just like $10 so that you get the experience of like unboxing this thing as if it's new.
That's one of the saddest things I've ever heard. That's like, that's on the level of like,
thank you,
sending yourself a Christmas card just to prevent one more day of that final not getting tied.
If you throw in, like, they clean off whatever it is, if say it's a console, if they give it a nice little clean, I'm fucking all in on that.
You can get
refurbished
little treatments. There are companies who do that sort of thing for you.
But repackage it as well.
Opening the
give
fresh
me a little
box
kiss on the forehead when you deliver it.
Yeah.
Come and
so
spoon
everything
me.
Everything's
gonna
be okay. Yes.
A little card falls out. We're proud of you. Love mum and dad. Just like the full treatment.
They take you down to the pub and you get to go there for a while with your friends. Yeah, this is a great idea for a company.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it's very annoying. But what were we fucking talking about? Oh yeah, that OLED switch. Oh.
Buying shit.
I don't know, man. That seems crazy to me.
I probably won't end up doing it, but it did. The fact that the thought entered my head goes to show you like how far we've come from when we first talked about it.
Yeah.
Like, nah, no, you know, no point. And then just thinking about it like, well, you know, it means the postie's turning up. It means opening a little package and sliding all the stuff out. And
I feel pretty stupid having two switches. And if I sold them both and just got an OLED switch, then technically that'd be no money out. And it would make me more sensible.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good idea. You should do that.
Yes. But you would be doing that in order to have the model that I think is, as we've talked about, objectively a bit worse than just both of those. Like, I think having one OLED is somehow slightly worse than having an OG and a Switch Lite. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, we talked about how it's kind of the screen is just stretched up, so stuff might end up looking shittier on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that OLED Switch is basically like one of these console revisions that they've done in the past.
Yes.
And
yes,
Nintendo had the fucking gall to remake their fucking launch trailer for it as well.
Yeah, imagine back in the day them doing a big reveal of this new Nintendo 64 that just keeps cartridge data hot for a few seconds less and just putting it out like, yeah, how good's this?
They sort of did. When those IMAX came out, they were like, oh, good idea. And we're like, here's the jungle green Nintendo 64. Like,
fuck.
They promoed those pretty heavily. The big Pikachu one where his foot was the reset button.
That's right. And then, of course, they had the expansion pack that all of a sudden, this little... It's so funny that the Nintendo 64 came out with a big just hole in the center of it. And then after a couple of years, they're like, you know that big weird kind of gap that's in the front of your console? Well, you put this bastard in there and it makes it a little bit more powerful. I'd love something like that to come out. Just like, not a console revision, just like a little... Just like a little fucking thing that you slot into the USB port or whatever.
You should
makes it run a bit better.
Jam one of those Seagate expansion, the Xbox. I think I've described what I mean. The memory expansion things for the Xbox, you jam them in the back and it's got like a custom type of slot and it does seem, they're very expensive and I don't need the extra
SSDs,
space.
SSDs, yeah.
But they are SSDs, but they're like expansion memory SSDs.
Yeah.
They're some bullshit.
Yeah. The Nintendo already did a model revision for the Switch. Remember the battery life went up?
Yeah,
so they've
done
it. Did they mention that or was that just maybe reported on? But
it was just reported on. It was just like not... I think it had a slightly different box too. So if you did want to go looking for it, you could.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like something that they were like, hey, this is the bit. It was just like, it's been a couple of years and we're just sort of using like exactly what we're talking about. Oh, we're just using slightly different parts now and there happens to be a slight advantage to doing that.
Anyway, there's new PS5s that you can't get.
Yeah. There's also still a chip shortage. I saw that reported in the past week. It's like, it's not clearing up anytime soon. You know, the supply chains are still kind of fucked everywhere.
Prices of like video cards and stuff like that have gone down as the cryptocurrency market has shrunk, which is a good thing. And I hope all of those fucking crypto millionaires crash their fucking Ferraris.
Yep.
I hope that dumb yacht that's called Dogecoin fucking sinks. But, a yacht named after a meme of fucking Bodie McBoat, Bitcoiny McBitface, whatever the fuck you're floating. I hope you drown. I hope you actually die in a storm, in a hurricane.
Once again, we're mid-lockdown. We're not fully responsible for the negativity that comes out of our mouths.
I, Adam Knox, of sound mind, hereby declare that I played a couple of games this week.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, I could fuck with that.
And you did this in sound mind, you say?
Of sound
tell
mind.
Me more.
Tell you what, of squeezed fucking pained head, though, because I put on the PSVR helmet for a number of hours, not many, like two, to play I Expect You to Die,
right?
Which is a spy-themed puzzle game from a couple years ago that just got a sequel that I haven't played yet, but I will.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you fucking try me. I will. Don't test me.
I don't know. I think you'll lose interest and play something new midweek.
There's no way that I'm ironically drowning between now and then because I wished it on others and the fates declared that I should suffer for my, dickishness. They'd
hubris.
Use some other word. Yeah, they probably say hubris, but it means dickishness. And to have the hubris to use the word hubris, how dare you?
That's the absolute irony of the word hubris. But
the irony of the word hubris is the sentence that, like, they wouldn't have made Fraser Crane say on this.
Yeah, I reckon I whacked that in a couple of essays during university.
Furthermore, I played it on the PlayStation VR because I had already been interested in it and I think had bought it during a past sale. So
I already had the
first one sitting there.
Is it on Oculus? Do you know?
It is. Yep. Both of them are. They're on Oculus. They're on Steam as well. You can get them everywhere. But I played it on PlayStation, which is just like that. I'm looking forward to a revision of that headset because it is. It really squeezes my admittedly big head.
I honestly don't remember what it felt to wear, but I remember being pleasantly surprised by the Oculus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't chucked mine on in a while. I want to go back and play more of Astrobot Rescue Mission, but that's the thing that holds me off is I think I would have a tough time chucking that helmet on.
It's not too bad. The Quest 2 is very good and the resolution is lower on the PSVR and the Move controllers are certainly worse than the Go controllers or the Quest controllers or whatever the fuck they're called. But it wasn't too bad. You adjust pretty quick and like that PSVR is still best sort of... actually, it isn't. The Quest 2 is the best sort of bang for your buck headset thing you can get. But the PlayStation VR is a decent alternative if you've
The PlayStation VR headset is the best headset that you can get for the PlayStation.
I agree.
I'm forced to agree.
But there are a couple of revisions of the PSVR headset since we're talking it. Anyway,
true.
It was decent. And the game is fun. It is a very standard VR puzzle game, which means you are sitting in a spot and you have a bunch of little levers and cupboards and shit around you in a few different scenarios. And you are trying to figure out how to make those things interact to solve puzzles. You are filling up test tubes with different colors and looking for clues in the environment that are written on the backs of pieces of paper you can hold to figure out which colors to combine to make a corrosive agent that lets you open a little copper chain that is stuck to a lever that you need to pull. You know, it's that sort of escape room bullshit, which I really like. And it's got a like 60s James Bond paint slathered over the top that I wasn't as into. Really, it's not terrible, but it is a little grating in the same way that happens when just something that's been parodied to death gets done one more time. The opening credits thing is like, yeah, cool. You made like a James Bond looking opening credits, but it's in VR and it's all around you. But also, I've seen this 100,000 times.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it isn't as cute anymore. You know what I mean? That aesthetic of
it
like...
peaked with Weird Al Yankovic's introduction to the movie Spy Hard.
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, when it was Get Smart doing it also in the 60s.
Right.
Like when it was in the even the same decade from six decades ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It is... That aspect of the game is a little bit tired. But I did really enjoy the type of puzzles it had in it where, like, you can die. You can fuck it up to the point where you have to repeat the puzzle.
Right.
And so...
Well, it expects you to.
Exactly. The game isn't lying. It does actually literally... it would be amazed if you got through the whole thing without dying.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like every game should just be called that. It's like, I expect you to die. I built this game. I've put enemies in.
Mm.
I've put challenges in. I'm building this game. I'm expecting you to die at some point in playing.
I expect you to die is the spiritual sequel to Dark Souls Prepare to Die Edition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then they should call every walking simulator, I don't expect you to die.
Yeah. It'd be weird if you die.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is a game about finding notes written for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone
yeah.
wrote you some notes, and if you die here, like, you had a pre-existing condition and you're not covered under our policy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But yeah. No free funds.
The puzzles are pretty easy if you've done a couple of VR puzzle games before. It's exactly the sort of shit you are imagining it is, where it's you know, this hidden button is here, and there's a piece of paper that will tell you the hidden button. All the sorts of standard things where, like, you've only got so many objects in the environment that you even can use.
Right.
And it's relatively simple to figure them out. But the one difference there is that there's sort of a sequence of events type of, not like 12 minutes, but more like that, where it's things will develop in the room. And it is time-based, so if you don't have this before the second event, then you will die, and you need to know about right. that when going back through the loop. So each of okay. the puzzles, when you finish it, you'll get a completion time of like 3.5 minutes or something like that. But mm-hmm. you've done a couple of rotations probably where something's fucked up, a grenade's fallen out of a thing, and you've gone, huh, there's a grenade in there, I better remember that, and then you rapidly go through. And I actually really enjoyed, or, you know, more than I thought would in a lot of other games, replaying those levels to get to the point where you died last time. Because the feeling of having a puzzle game that, like, you know, took you a little bit of looking around and manipulating stuff and figuring it out the first time, being able to zip through that with both hands and, like, quickly doing things yep. and getting things set up for yep. the next puzzle feels really good.
Mm.
That's a lot of fun. And so there's, like, little achievements of different times and, like, try and find this weird thing you can do in these levels. It'll show you, like, sort of some grayed out boxes that have hint names, and you can go back through. I didn't do too much of that. Then there's, like, maybe it's like 8 levels, somewhere around that number, 8 or 9. It's quite short, as a lot of VR games are, but all the levels were fun. I had a good yep. time playing through it. I was able to easily skip over the story and writing stuff that I wasn't particularly into. I didn't need a British man telling me about Zachivus or whatever his name was, the enemy guy. It was something like that. I've gotten it wrong, but you get the idea from it. You get the gist.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that sounds really good. So if you think that sounds good, then the sequel is out now.
And yeah.
presumably as good, if not better.
Hey.
You would have to imagine.
I'll tell you when I Expect You to Die 3 comes out. And I'll get round to playing too. No, I will play that, but I am definitely going to go in on that one on the quest rather than...
on the yeah, yeah,
right.
yeah.
Yeah, there's something about the physicality of VR games where repetition isn't a problem. It's like, I'll play yeah. Beat Saber yeah. like every day doing the same. Although I do notice that I think they occasionally chuck in an update where they change the actual, you know, sequence, like the physical things in each
Beat
Saber.
They make it look a bit different.
Yeah, yeah, just so yeah. you're not getting... just like entirely bored. Mm. But that yes, there is something about the movements being satisfying enough to do that the repetition is not a problem. It's, yeah. It's
yeah,
a weird
I think
thing.
Because you are in control of the pace of it, like I think one of the most dull things about a game is if you're just holding forward to walk past a thing you've seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
why I'm not really into the Tomb Raider, the more recent Tomb Raider games and those sorts of things where if you're not interacting at all, but yeah, do exactly what you're saying, repeating the same task, but with your actual limbs, it feels cool. Cause you yeah. can give yourself a little, you chuck things in the air and then catch them. Like VR
yeah,
is just
yeah,
innately
yeah.
satisfying. And this game is not responsible for that, but it doesn't suffer from it.
Mm.
Right.
But so yeah, speaking it's totally okay and interesting puzzles. And if you've got a VR thing, you've probably already played it a couple of years ago and you've already played the second one, which I'll chat to you about next week, probably.
Speaking of Beat Saber updates, they were teasing during the week a new music pack. And
oh,
we talked
really?
A little while ago about they added the Interscope music pack. We had a bit of a discussion about like
yeah.
the weird choices they make with the music that they add in and how sporadically they do it. And then, you know, it's just like 5 songs at a time. And the Interscope one was the most that one of those music packs has ever aligned with kind of my personal taste. So I thought, oh, here we go. This could be kind of opening the door to them adding more of this kind of stuff. and they teased what it was that they were going to add more music, and then I believe it's just a pack of Skrillex songs.
It is. Yeah.
Such a fucking bummer.
It's the same genre as all of the songs that were created for the game. But like, they
work. Who
is
the director of content in there? It's like, oh man, I wish they'd add more.
They've
like,
got,
I don't know,
the same sensibilities as me, it seems like, where they've finally gotten around a Skrillex. Because we're far past Skrillex now, and they're like, oh yeah, this is pretty good, we'll put it in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. It's not interesting, but it would be fun. I think that it's going to be undoubtedly a fun music pack to play through. And I haven't gone in on the BTS one, but I've got songs from most of the others. The Linkin Park one is great because it's like, again, it's really satisfying. It's music that you want to like headbang to, but you're like chopping bricks and shit in the air.
I'm dissing on it, but you know, I didn't really know any BTS, and then you know, getting the BTS pack got me into liking the music of BTS. So who knows? Maybe next week I'll be here talking about how much I love Skrillex because I downloaded the Beat Saber pack just for, because again, they get me every time. It's like, even if I'm not interested, it's lockdown. It's like, I want new songs to play on it.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a fun evening of like, oh, I'm just going to go through all these one by one and, you know.
You know what would be a good one? And I know that Abraham Beats, who is the creator of Beat Saber.
Yes.
Abraham R. Beats. And his the game is just his name, but written like you would write it on a form where it's Beats, comma, Abra.
Right. Yeah. I never knew that. That's fascinating.
That's true, because I know him and I talked to him, and I'm going to suggest the name of the group, Village People.
Oh.
Yes.
Telling me that wouldn't be the best Beat Saber pack?
Yes.
In the Navy.
Having a slice up in the Y.
Exactly.
You know, having
doing the letters.
Yeah.
It's,
fuck.
Oh, what about this?
Yeah,
You have to strap the controllers to your legs, and there's a river dance pack.
Oh,
yep.
Chucking your novelty dance songs, right? Your Macarenas, your ketchup songs.
Where are they?
That wouldn't be bad at all.
Yeah, I'd fuck with that. My actual like ultimate music pack would be Daft Punk, which is like Skrillex is like, you know, the
huge
the Daft Punk you have at home. But like, I would love to see something like that. But I'll play
Skrillex. The flip side of this is Just Dance, which I bought the 2021 version ages ago and hadn't gotten around to playing it until recently. Me and my girlfriend went through it and played a bunch of the songs in there. They always have really good like songs on there that are like, you know, high in the charts currently. Then they'll go into some like classics. Like, they always have really good music packs, but the way that they get you is every year and like a whole new version of the game comes out.
Yeah.
And even though they have like an online subscription service where you can get all the previous stuff that they've put out, you have to go and buy the new cartridge to get all those, like whatever it is, 20 current songs that they add to it. But yeah, they're the flip side of the coin where they're always adding good new music, but they, you know, rather than it just being a downloadable thing, it's like you got to go pay fucking $90 for the cart, which is just... just literally playing the songs to you. There's not even, you know, a great degree of gameplay in it.
I actually think music sounds better on cartridge. I don't buy digital. I think it actually sounds a little bit nicer and cleaner. There's like a raw sound on the cartridge that you get.
Yeah, that maximum 98 kilobytes per second is really...
Those old Britney Spears, like 20-second things. What were those fucking little cartridges called that you put in those little clips? And you had a key ring of little cartridges that played a snippet, like the chorus of a late 90s song.
Yeah.
Do you remember those?
Yeah, fuck. What? Yeah. What were they called?
Man, fuck! I don't know! It's going to ruin my day. Because I can't go down to the library. They're not open because of COVID. So I can't look this up.
Yeah.
And that would be where I'd find it, a book at the library.
Hit the reference section.
I have to go through
blowing dust off it. Yeah.
Well, speaking of nostalgia and things from years and years ago that people maybe hold in high regard because of their uniqueness at the time, but in reality, they weren't necessarily that unique or that much of a better product than the compact discs available at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking, but in relation to the platforming quality, Psychonauts.
Yes.
Just to lay it out all exactly so that you can understand. It was pretty
unclear. Yeah, Psychonauts
unclear.
2 out this week. It's on Game Pass. It's nearly 20 years since the original came out.
Fuck.
I believe 16, none of us ever played years, the original.
Like that. I played Jeez. A little bit of it, but got bored quite early on.
Yeah, right. And this one was... This was crowdfunded, wasn't it? Yeah. This sequel was kind of Kickstarter sort of thing.
I think
it's a platform
so
that Double Fine created, I think.
Ages ago. Yeah. Psychonauts 2 has been in production for a long time. And I believe has sort of changed like where its funding has come from. Because at this point, I believe at least a chunk of it is Microsoft. Because I think it's exclusive to PC and Xbox now. And
yeah.
There were backers originally, because there's a bit in the game where you find like a there's like a vault of all these people's brains and you can kind of cycle through it. Mm. And all the names attached to the brains are people who funded early on.
Right.
And they, like Double Fine tweeted a thing going like, hey, if you've been left out, like email us and let us know.
That's crazy.
Now, at a certain point. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that I think that's a like a, you know, obviously been a pledge goal, a pledge, whatever you call
reward.
It, reward. Yeah, reward.
It looks like, so yeah, they raised like $4 million or something. Initially, they maybe even got an extra bit of, yeah, like capital investment. But then Microsoft acquired Double Fine a couple of years ago and like paid back that investment at like 140% return. So yeah, whoever bought in... is getting paid well for it if there is, you know, profits and stuff. But
that's the thing, because it was through Fig, which the idea of it is that you aren't like just handing them money to back them. You are investing in the game.
Yeah, right. You have equity.
A partner.
Yeah. Yep.
So
yep,
the idea that could be the case, and then they're like, we might have left some out. Please message us.
Yes. Bit weird. And but saying message us, but also going, you have to do it within the next like 24 hours because then we can't do it beyond that.
I mean, it could be
we're literally just like coding in and putting a name in. It seems like
You know. It could be that plenty of those accounts are deleted and shit now because Fig has changed. I'm pretty sure since 2015 when this happened,
right?
And so yeah, the game's been in production for a long time. It's a sequel to one of those games that was like a, you know, cult classic considered type of thing.
Yes.
On the
and
PS2 and
what I couldn't
ones.
Work out about Tim Schafer and Double Fine. So he was a LucasArts guy. He left and founded Double Fine off the back of that. So, you know, this game has launched with a fair amount of sort of fanfare because there's a lot of people that love Tim Schafer, love Double Fine, love the legacy of like the LucasArts games that he worked on. And I was reading, I've never been that invested in what they do. I've never really played a Double Fine game. So I was kind of reading up a little bit about like the history of the company and everything. And is this right that him and some others founded it? They left LucasArts because they were annoyed that LucasArts was kind of moving away from making the adventure games that they had all worked on and enjoyed. And then the first thing that they make is a platformer. They leave because LucasArts aren't making this style of game anymore, and then they make a game that is not in that style of game.
I'm not sure they've ever made an adventure game.
Yeah,
right.
It's certainly not in that style.
No.
Yeah,
because they made Brutal Legend, which again was like kind of a cult hit that didn't have huge blockbuster success. It seems to be a running theme for Double Fine.
Yes. Costume Quest, like stacking in the cave and a bunch of those like 360 early kind of arcade games.
Right.
A thing called Broken Age that I think was an adventure game. And then, yes.
Yeah.
More recently, some stuff. But their biggest game so far probably is Psychonauts 2 here. It's been anticipated for ages. Like you say, we're not in on Psychonauts. I sort of actively didn't enjoy my brief time with the first one years ago.
Well, I remember seeing a little clip of it in the Microsoft event. Was it last year that we stayed up and did on Twitch or whatever?
Who knows anymore? What does it matter?
The little clip that they showed, I remember like all of us being like, this looks shit. And then as it was getting closer to release, just being like, have absolutely no interest in it. And then I think I mentioned this last week, seeing some reviews of it once it was out and actually, you know, seeing a bit more of what the game actually was, starting to think like, oh, okay, maybe I should, you know, it's on Game Pass, maybe I should try this. It seems like it might be up my alley. And, yeah, I've been playing it this week. I'm 8 hours in and really enjoying it. But I know that from talking last night, we all have kind of varying levels of, enthusiasm for it.
Three Little Pigs. No, wait. Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
or the Three Little Pigs.
Yeah.
No. The pigs are kind of a unified front, aren't they?
But the
pigs have different houses,
and they have positions that are more or less defensible than others. And that's
that's true.
Yeah, Tommy's the brick house. It's like, yeah, he likes it. He has some quibbles, but he's laid it all out there. Adam,
I'm living in, I think, sticks. Probably. It's all right.
Yeah, sticks.
You know, it'll do if there's nothing else. But you know, not the best house around.
Yeah.
But Ben's sitting there. The big bad wolf's come along. He's just, it's hay fever season. He's literally just sneezed. He hasn't even put that much effort into it. Just by accident, Ben's house has just crumbled immediately.
Ben has seen the wolf outside of the window and started shaking in fear, and that motion has knocked his house down. Because you don't like it at all, do you?
No, and I have no real reason. So why don't, Tommy, why don't you talk about why you like it first? I think let's lead with the positive.
Yeah, okay, sure. So it's, to give a bit of backstory on essentially what it is, it follows on immediately from the first one. Like, literally, I think it's set like the next day.
The Rhombus of Ruin happened in between, which was a VR Psychonauts game. So there's technically two Psychonauts game already. And yeah, it picks up right after, which they make jokes about in the game of like how it's been such a long time in real life, but a short time.
Yeah. And it does a really good little, like a previously on kind of thing at the start, because obviously you make something like this and it's been this long and, you know, you have to assume that a lot of people are going to come to it, you know, completely fresh. You're a little kid who's a psychic. It's set in the world of psychics. Psychics are like these kind of secret agents who can go into people's minds to sort of, influence their thoughts. And there's like basically this whole sort of, spy caper, borderline sort of superhero setup of you having to, you'll meet someone in the quote-unquote real world, even though it's still very cartoony, and you'll sort of find out a bit about what you need to do in order to change their thoughts, which is just an excuse to go into their head, which is like a very creative, cartoony world, and it'll be set up around like, oh, this person works here, so you get it telegraphed like, oh, okay, well, I guess this world that we go into is going to be like bowling alley themed or whatever because the person loves bowling. It's basically just an excuse to have these very creative 3D platformy levels. It's like I kind of went in thinking that it would be like a Banjo-Kazooie or whatever with like a big hub world and then these kind of like big worlds that kind of stem off it. It's not that. The platforming is like a lot more linear where you go into an area and you are going almost more kind of Crash Bandicoot style from A to B. The levels don't last a particularly long time. They just kind of get you in and give you this kind of creative little hook and then you're out, and it's more like this progression of a story. Like it almost feels like a kind of a Naughty Dog game where you're in these areas, you're kind of traversing through them, and then that's it. Story beat happens and you move on. It's not the kind of, here's a big area, explore it all, explore every nook and cranny. It does still have those elements to it, but it took me a while to kind of work out exactly what it was doing and go, oh, there's not ever going to be a point where I'm just like let loose in this big area and expected to kind of find all these little tasks or whatever. It's go into this person's head. You see like a big kind of totem up the very end of it. You got to walk your way up there and then you're out and you story beats happen and then you're on to the next kind of one of them.
Yeah. And you almost want to just follow that story through it. It's more fun that way than trying to go back. I'll often play platformers of like doing a level 100% and then moving on.
Yeah,
and
same.
There's enough of those collectibles that aren't accessible until you get abilities that you get later in the game and stuff like that. Like you can go back into old levels at some point, but you want to just follow where the game is telling you to go for quite some time, I think, before you go and do any of that cleanup stuff if you want to do that.
But I'm also at a bit where it games will often do this thing where they're like, hey, just so you know, before you go and do this next thing, that's kind of it. Which typically signals like, well, this is the game ending. And it gave me one of those little markers. And I kind of looked at how much I'd played and I'm like, and I cross-referenced that with the how long to beat listing for it. I was like, if I somehow just raced through this really quickly, but it's not ending. It like takes you to this like whole new area where it kind of leaves behind the like the hub that you'd been in for
right.
the majority of the game. And so, yeah, like mechanically, it's fine. It's definitely not up there with it purely mechanically with any of the great platformers or 3D platformers or anything like that. But the dressing of it, like the world design and the not so much the writing, but the general like the moment to moment of all this stuff happening and the whole conceit of jumping into these people's heads and the very creative level design around what their brain looks like and the sort of little challenges that you have to do. That's what's getting me through. I'm just really loving it. It's not something that I think I'd replay once I'm done with it. It's competent enough as a platformer, but it's just I'm just loving the creativity in it. It feels to me like a cool sort of Nickelodeon kind of, very, very cartoony and very like just having a character set up what they're about and just thinking and, you know, just wondering like, oh, I wonder what, you know, what's this level going to be like? And it rather than it just be like flatly like, oh, they like food, so it's food world. Like it's very, very creative. Like it for me so far, it's going like three or four steps beyond what you would expect when you hear the setup of like, this right. is what this world is going to be, which is what I'm really enjoying.
It's
about
like
it.
The Persona 5 palaces where it takes a simple idea, but it stretches it far enough to make it interesting where like, just to give an example, that's kind of a bit of a spoiler, but it's very early on. The first sort of level you go into
right.
is a woman who used to work at a hospital and now is like addicted to gambling because of something you've done. And so it combines a hospital and a casino in a really interesting way. Like it elevates it past it being like, here's a weird hospital or here's a weird casino.
Here's a casino. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It jams ideas together. And that's the thing I'm liking the most about this game is that environmental design in particular. Yeah. I think that is really creative and is interesting and well-made. I think almost everything else, though, is really middle of the road for me, where I think your Nickelodeon, like, early 2000s. I mean, it has the same guy who did the voice of Invader Zim as Raz, so that is part of it. But
oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, he's got he's that guy. But the writing is not to my tastes, necessarily. I don't think there's anything, like, terrible in there. It's not, like, annoyingly unfunny or anything like that. It's fine and it's lighthearted, but it isn't like it's all kind of middle. I think especially the platforming is just about as bare bones and plain as it reminds me of like the first ukulele, like the 3D one, where it's just like this is the most sort of cheeseburger platformer you could think of. You know what I mean? Like you've got these sort of abilities that you can use, but it's always very obvious where you've got to use them and they don't really add anything. It just is. And now here's the section where you have to zip between these zip lines for a while, or here's the section where you need to burn a painting, or you know, like
But weirdly enough, I said this to you guys last night, that's one of the things I'm enjoying the most about it is that it's just very it's like it's perfect time for me to just put on a nice, bright, like I love the world design, so I'm just interested in seeing that. I don't really care that there's not sections that are, you know, I love a challenging 3D platformer, but I also don't really mind that this isn't that. Like,
it's not that it's not challenging, though. It's that creativity that is in the environmental design isn't there in the platforming. Like, it doesn't have to be hard, it's so straightforward.
Yeah, it's not doing like a kind of, you know, the Mario games do it great, where it's like, here's what the world looks like, and then here's a little hook and a little gimmick that, you know, they kind of wring everything out of. Yeah. It's like each level is designed really well in terms of like the aesthetics of it, but there's no thing where it's like, oh, here's the challenge that I'm doing in this that is based around the environment, that is very creative, that is using that. It's like the actual platforming bits in each level could be completely interchanged. There's one a bit later on that is quite different. There's a couple of little ones as you get further on where it mixes up a little bit, but not, it never really goes all the way with it.
No, and I don't think it ever like, it just, that it always feels like I'm going through the motions. Even when it does do that, there's something about the platforming that is just like stilted enough that it feels quite bland. And that's sort of how I feel about the writing too. And this is such a small quibble. I think the music is good and I think the voice acting is done well. But there's something with how it's mixed together and like the audio like design of it that is so weirdly empty that I'm finding the game off-putting as a whole because of that. Like the aesthetic of it feels dull and empty. There's something about the way the audio is done that where someone will talk and then there will be a brief little pause and then the next person will talk and then there will be a pause and then the next person will talk and there's no music underneath it and it just feels really like unfinished and rough. And I think it's something that is having a larger impact. And like that is kind of what the whole game feels like too in some ways. Yeah. Just a little unfinished and underdone in subtle ways that have an effect of making it less appealing.
Yeah, I didn't know this was crowdfunded. I thought it was just like, I don't know, an old property was brought back before looking into it for this episode. It feels like a cheaper production that's aiming for, you know, AAA. Like, or
yeah,
it's just it just is a AA game, you know, like
Double Fine.
It is
sort of essentially an indie, I guess, but it does at the beginning it sets itself up. It's got a lot of kind of AAA trapping, so it kind of it traps you into feeling like it's that at the beginning, and then you sort of have to recalibrate and go, oh, this is essentially like a relatively small
and
team.
It's not that it needs to meet those standards. Plenty of games don't have that budget and don't do that. It's just that it feels awkward. There's something about it that feels teenage awkward in a way in the production of it that is like not the result of its scale, but the result of like just polish on what's there, you know? It's really hard to quantify.
I think we don't see under the hood of games development, and when you don't have infinite money, you don't have infinite time, some things get left out. And I think what I assume people like the original and this sequel for is sort of the charm of the aesthetic and the characterization and the creativity, like you said, the atmosphere, the level design. And that's all here, you know, like, but I think for me, my taste, like I looked at it and I like some of the initial enemies or like, you know, antagonists you come across feel a little like Nightmare Before Christmas, which again, you know, that's great. That sort of Tim Burton-y aesthetic. A lot of people like it. It's a little bit Ariel Monsters, you know, and like you were saying, those sort of Nickelodeon cartoons from, early 2000s and before. It's just not me. It's just not vibing with me.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff isn't getting me. I think the writing on the dialogue level and story level and mission level is better than a Ratchet and Clank.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say is that, for me, kind of the perfect game. I mean, that was like, I loved Ratchet and Clank, but my least favorite thing about it was that it's a bit DreamWorks light in terms of those kinds of elements. So
plays it very safe.
For me, the perfect game would be like a mechanically Ratchet and Clank that just goes for it a little bit more in this way, that just has that kind of like environmental design and creativity like cranked up another few notches. I mean, even Mario Odyssey, which I loved, like again, it felt like a lot of the worlds in that game were here's just Snow World and it's not really, you know, going for it much in an aesthetic way beyond just like, there's these little walrus guys. Like whereas, a team like this kind of overseeing those kind of elements and just ratcheting it up another few notches, like that's creatively the stuff that I really, really enjoy.
I think part of the problem with this one though is that it is doing that creativity from a still kind of 2005-y lens where like a lot of the quirkiness in it is still like this guy loves bacon and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and it isn't like again. It's not bad. It's just bland at this point, I think, or like the gameplay and the dialogue and the story, which are the two things that would get me through it, are a little just not special, you know.
I think like when I say
not
that stuff is, you know, it reminds me of older stuff, and it's not entirely to my taste. I still think that it's good enough, and like, I always appreciate something that is like, yeah, interesting, not playing it safe. And so I think it could have definitely drawn me through this game had the mechanics of the platforming been as smooth and fun to play as Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. And they're just, not. And for a platformer where at times I'm not engaged in the story entirely, if it's not fun, like I genuinely don't find it very fun to play. Like the sort of jumping around and shooting and dodging. Like what you say with the dialogue, Nox, being a little stilted, I find that is the case with the platforming and sort of the button inputs and stuff. And yeah, like it's just, I got it on Game Pass. It's part of a subscription service. I'm not pissed off, you know. I'm not slamming it.
You were telling me you were pissed off and going to slam it before this.
Well, I've changed my mind.
Get into the slam zone.
Someone Ben's pissed off gamer moment of the week.
The pissed off video game nerd.
I'm the pissed off gamer. This week we're talking about microtransactions again.
And I like them, but I don't like this game because there's a woman in it. But no, I just think it's not for me. And I think if you are someone who loves the aesthetic and the creativity of the levels and the characters and has nostalgia for it, fucking go for your life, you know? I hope
maybe
that's enough for you. And
maybe
if
this
it is,
just speaks to the kind of like smooth brain entertainment that I'm into consuming at the moment. But right, in spite of all these, you know, these flaws that I agree with you guys it has, I'm 8 hours in. I'm probably going to finish it, and at the moment, I'm having such a nice time with it that it is a contender for my game of the year at this point.
Well, I've seen people say that. I've seen many people say that.
Yeah, in spite of those flaws, it's like it. You know, sometimes something you can just be aware of it, but it's like, yeah, I'm really not caring because it's doing what I want out of a game right now. It's doing those elements so well that all that other stuff doesn't really matter. And I also think it's worth mentioning that thematically kind of what it's doing is very interesting to me, where it's talking a lot about mental health, where you go into someone's head and they're talking about the issues that they have or the fears that they have or the concerns that they have, and the way that it kind of personifies and then represents them as little enemies, I think is kind of neatly done. It reminds me of a bit of a Pixar thing where it's like, hey, imagine a world where you can do this, and then it just rings every sort of thing of like, oh, well, how would this feeling be represented in this world, I think is kind of cool. And I also think it, you know, we talked about this the other week, the whole thing of the content warning in Boyfriend Dungeon. Was that last week?
Yeah.
Whenever it was. I think this does a really neat job of that at the start, where it kind of comes up with a big thing where it's like, hey, this game talks about this stuff and we hope that it's taken in the lighthearted way that it's intended. But, you know, you might want to opt out if you think that's going to affect you. And if you are that person, here's a website you can go to. I thought that was like really like nicely. Yeah. I think that's worth kind of
it's a shame
pointing
that
out a thing that's nicely and eloquently done.
It's a shame that the website they point you to is bluewaffle.com. I thought that was a real error in judgment. But yeah, I agree that like if the stuff that's in there clicks with you, then it's sick. But I do think that just like the platforming or all the aesthetic stuff is choices. And I think it is, or it's taste based. And I think that a lot of it is well done if you are going to be prone to liking it, you know, some of those technical parts of it that I just think are a little not quite polished up. There's some of that stuff, but then the platforming I do think is just kind of basic. And
I think
it's shame.
The, you know, the tutorial, you know, some games,
but
it's like
not terrible.
This is an
game. I want to point that out.
I'm trying to be more charitable in this discussion because I just flat out don't like it. I'm trying to.
Some games you have to say, like, you know, you've got to give it a few hours or do the tutorial and then do a bit more and wait till it kind of lets you out into the world. Breath of the Wild is a really good example where the plateau is like not a good example of what the game actually is. But with this, I think, the tutorial gives you enough of what the platforming is actually going to end up being like and also the whole tone and sensibility of it and what that's going to be like. And if that clicks with you and if you find the platforming in that just like fine enough that you're enjoying the rest of it, then I think you'll enjoy it all the way through. Because that was the experience I had just from the tutorial. I was like, oh, this is cool and creative and kind of funky. I you know, I, I'm I'm in. This platforming seems like fine, not like revolutionary or completely awesome.
I had
awesome,
the same problems during that bit with like jerky pacing is a thing I haven't mentioned yet as well, which is like the ratio of cutscenes to gameplay and like when they pop up and how much you get to do in between is a little off for a lot of the game. Like it just it feels. Yeah. And this is, I mean, I fucking like Metal Gear Solid 4. I pick and choose when I care about things. But today I'm in this mood.
The opening of this game, and I watched, you know, I watched the whole thing. I watched the backstory and all of that stuff. I felt a little unsettled by the point it dropped me into the game. I wasn't entirely clear on everything, like why I was doing, like, and I think it's probably a pacing issue.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the best kind of recommendation we can give. It feels like whatever your response to the tutorial is,
yes,
that will carry you through for the rest of the game. So, yeah, if you've got Game Pass, it's not something where it's like, hey, you've got to play 5 hours of this to work out whether you're in or not. No. It's like, yeah, you can do the opening half hour and, yeah, whatever you think at that point, that's a good indication of how you're going to take to the rest of it.
Well, and we've got a one bad, one medium, and one good here. So on average, that means we think it's medium, which means that I'm right. So I just thought I'd point that out.
I thought you were going to say it averages out to a double fine.
No, it doesn't. Oh, shit. It's a triple it's fine. Yeah, actually, okay. Yeah, no, I get what you mean because you two bring each other down to a fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, fine. Yeah. Oh fuck, man!
Right? In a way, it's the perfect game for that company to make. So
they got us.
The Last of Us Part 2 is a naughty dog.
All right. Well, yeah. That's I'm. Yeah. I think it's worth dipping into at least the tutorial if you've got Game Pass.
Yes.
We are gonna. Yep.
I was gonna say if you don't have Game Pass. If you love the aesthetic from all the reviews you've watched and all the trailers, if you think that that's absolutely your style, the dialogue, the characters seem charming, if you go in knowing that the platform is kind of pedestrian, you probably will still like it. It's still worth, I think, a crack based on, your appreciation of the trailers. But if you're looking for like a fun, interesting, creative, challenging platformer, it's less of a sure bet.
Play the last Crash Bandicoot if you didn't.
Yeah.
Or Ratchet and Clank or Mario Bowser Fury Mario 3D.
Yes.
Or, I think that's the other thing is there's been a few good platformers lately.
Yeah, true.
Totally.
Yeah. Lately. All right.
All right. We're going to wrap it up for another week.
Wait, Ben's got a thought.
What are we doing next week?
Good question.
Everyone will find out next week.
Okay. That's all.
Is there something out this... Yeah, I think there's something out this week. Tomorrow.
I guess we'll talk about video games.
We'll work it out.
Yeah. Don't put me in a box.
Thank you for listening. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to our Patreon. You can get a bonus episode every week. We're currently going through the early aughts, doing a year in review.
Oh, yes.
The year of the 2000s.
Yes.
We've also been doing the videos. We've been playing Fortnite. We're doing The Sims. We're making a house and making ourselves in The Sims.
Yes.
You can get early access to some of them every week if you're on the Patreon. And even if you're not, they're all up on our YouTube channel. We've got the Bandcamp premium episodes. Filthycasuals.com.au is where you can find all of that. Guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the pod. We'll see you next week. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals...
Whopper, mental health. That's Psychonauts. He would say Whopper, mental health.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love
it's
it.
It's actually a borough in South Korea.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.